General Menezes, Real 11. We're talking about your time as an instructor at the Staff College from 1957 to 1960. Are there any other points you wish to make about the Staff College?
I would like to emphasize that at that point of time, it was the only inter-services staff college at that level, that is, grade two or major, lieutenant commander, squadron leader level in the world. And this is entirely due to the perceptions of the late Major General W.D.A. Lentaigne, DSOMC, who had been the first commandant of this new concept of Defense Services Staff College. He set the tone for the future. He set the foundation for that illustrious institution.
Now, what was your next posting?
I next moved on to command the 3rd Battalion of the Indian Grenadiers, a battalion of the regiment from which I had been posted out earlier to the Assam Regiment when there were problems in the Assam Regiment. Now there were problems in this battalion, which is employed in counterinsurgency operations in Naga Hills. Now the insurgency in Naga Hills had really, you can say, started in December 1955, but had not been taken seriously, inasmuch as it was deemed a civil power problem, and as I mentioned earlier, a battalion from Shillong was sent to clear up so-called insurgents at a particular location in Tuan Sang on the Burma border. They claimed to have cleared up or dispersed the hostiles, and they came back to Shillong. But progressively it was observed that they were just the so-called guerrillas or counterinsurgents were just melting away or had melted away, and they came back to strike another day. Anyway, to cut the story short, in 1960, the battalion that I had served in up to 1947, when we came out of Pakistan, was deployed in this counterinsurgency area, and certain events had taken place which had incurred the displeasure of higher authorities, just the same way as earlier, and there had been displeasure on the part of the higher authorities against the 3rd Battalion in the Assam Regiment, to which I had been posted to in order to sort the matter out. So here I was brought back to the 3rd Battalion of the Indian Grenadiers in Naga Hills to sort the battalion out. The battalion, an ambush had been inflicted by the hostiles, incurring casualties. Some of the village guard posts, three of the village guard posts under command had surrendered to the hostiles with their arms. So by and large, the superior authorities were not happy with the battalion. The battalion commander had taken leave and said he was not coming back, and he got his posting order while he was on leave. I was therefore rushed to take over this battalion, which I did from Instructor Staff College, which was unusual inasmuch as normally for after Instructor Staff College people got a staff posting. Nevertheless, I took over this battalion and sorted the problems out.
Now, what problems did you face and how did you sort them out?
Well, the only way of sorting them out was to lead from the front, in the sense that if you showed your physical presence, the counterinsurgents were less likely to ambush you. So we dominated the area by aggressive patrolling and by personally visiting these village guard posts. I put some confidence into them, because after all, They were Nagas themselves who were being attacked by their fellow Nagas. And within a fortnight of my arrival, one of the village guard posts was attacked by the hostiles. In the past, the hostiles would go through the motions of defending the post and then surrendering. This time they did not surrender till I was able to send a relief column of regular troops from my battalion. So inasmuch as this village guard post, this particular one, did not surrender when attacked by 150 hostiles, inasmuch in relation to the past, this was an achievement for which I got the necessary laudatory, shall we say, communications. But nevertheless, it was touch and go, but we succeeded in defeating the hostiles on this occasion, and as a result, they were more alert. Subsequently, by aggressive patrolling, we were able to capture one of the hostile commanders, a hostile lieutenant colonel, so called. But personally, he was desirous of surrendering. So from that point of view, it was a meeting of minds that we were dominating the area and he was getting tired, so he surrendered. So in its way, these were achievements that no village guard post while I was commanding in that area surrendered, nor were we ambushed. There were certain occasions when it was touch and go. The American Baptists had come in 100 years earlier to so-called convert the Nagas. The British had not allowed their own British missionaries in because the Nagas were headhunting. But the American Baptists had come in, had lost their heads, but they kept on coming back. So the Nagas thought there must be something in this religion that these people are prepared to lose their heads and still come back for more to lose their heads. So that in essence was how the American Baptists impressed the Nagas, and the majority of the Naga community became Christians as a result. But this only perpetuated their demand for independence, initially from British India and subsequently from what you may call Indian India. When the Simon Commission came in 1931, the Nagas, whose spokesman was a gentleman called Fizo, had said that since independence, the writing was on the wall, they did not want to be part of India. But of course the Simon Commission could not agree to that. 400,000 people could not be declared independent or economically viable, even though they argued subsequently that the islands in the Pacific had minuscule populations and were yet independent. So there was a gentleman called Fizo who had, when being rebuffed by the Simon Commission, he had then eventually joined the Japanese in World War II and had been part of the so-called fifth column of the Japanese. But nevertheless, at that point of time, the Assam Regiment and the Assam Rifles had stood firm, so Fizo had not succeeded. But as I have said earlier, once the then Major General Ayub Khan became GOC in East Pakistan in 1947-48, the Nagas contacted him, and between the Pakistanis and the Chinese, arms were supplied to future Naga insurgents, and that was the insurgency that we were confronted with, which commenced in December 1955, but was not taken seriously. But nevertheless, as I say, in the year that I commanded this battalion in Naga Hills, I was able to dominate the situation.
What sort of insurgency were you facing? I mean, what sort of terrorist or actions were they taking?
Well, they were trained. They were trained counterinsurgents, just like the insurgency in Malaya. They had been it was a common respect in Malaya. Here, it was ostensibly irredentist or whatever other term you wish to use. But the fires were stoked both by China as well as by Pakistan. Their main recourse, of course, was, as I say, to ambush regular troops, which they often did successfully. And my battalion was not the only one that had been ambushed before my tenure of command. Furthermore, their aim was to get more weapons, and for this purpose, they would get the village guard posts of their fellow Nagas to surrender and thereby get arms and ammunition the easy way, rather than have to send parties all the way to China or East Pakistan. It is the usual counterinsurgency or guerrilla tactic, ambushing convoys, ambushing patrols, inflicting casualties, hit and run, and then disappearing into the jungles. I had under my command the equivalent of two armed police battalions, that is, from each state or province in India had what the British called armed police. So at the time that I was there, a Central Reserve Police Battalion, as well as Madhya Pradesh, the old Central Provinces Armed Police Battalion, were under my command.
Any other particular incidents you remember from that time?
I mean, there were incidents, but they did not directly affect me. The hostiles, for example, shot down an Air Force aircraft that was being supply dropping, but not while doing supply dropping in my area. I mean, they attacked in a neighboring, they shot down the aircraft in a neighboring area. But be all that as it may, I remember one occasion these American Baptists came to celebrate their centenary of their entry into Naga Hills. That was in 1916, so they'd first come in 1860. And the hostiles decided to give a fireworks display in order to convince these American Baptists when they went back to the USA that the Indian Army was oppressing and repressing them. In the event, I let the Nagas fire, being quite convinced that they would not shoot the Americans. But if I had fired back with weapons at the Nagas, the American Baptists would have gone back and said that the Indians were suppressing the Nagas. So it was a kind of propaganda war that the Nagas were waging quite successfully in places like Britain, like the Reverend Trevor Huddleston was one of the people who was urging their cause in Britain. And Fizeau eventually did get asylum in Britain, where he eventually died. But the government of India was magnanimous enough to pay for the expenses of his body to be transported back to Nagaland, and a memorial to him exists outside Kohima, the capital of Nagaland, because the Naga Hills were given autonomy and were then called Nagaland. So the government of India was more magnanimous than Fizeau had been. All the anti-apartheid Anglican pastors in Britain had been so-called encouraging or shall we say, befriending FISO, as they considered the Indian government's attitude towards the Nagas was a form of apartheid. It was not in any way a form of apartheid. They could not have been given independence. They were given autonomy. So, really, they were really Don Quixote tilting at windmills insofar as backing these people.
So anything else about your time with the battalion, commanding the battalion?
No, as I say, I had my problems, but those were internal to the battalion. Insofar as the external problems were concerned, the battalion was not ambushed. And also the village guard post during my training in command did not surrender.
Now what about your internal problems in the battalion? I mean, you said that you did it mainly by personal example, by an aggressive... How were the problems within the battalion resolved?
Well, as I have told you, Field Marshal Slim had said there are no bad units, there are only bad officers. So the point is, the officers were bad because leadership had not been provided to them. It may have meant more work for me. I mean, for example, one officer had not set foot in Naga Hills proper. He'd spent his time in the rear party. It's a true story. I mean, the general officer commanding has sent me a message that his opinion of me would be molded by the fact whether I was able to bring this officer into Naga Hills. I did bring him in. I went down, collected him from the rear party in the plains, brought him in, launched him on a patrol. And by the time I returned to my headquarters, a message from the patrol returning carrying Tiger. The code word for the commander of the patrol was Tiger. I mean, that was the kind of person he was. But nevertheless, he then took leave, got himself posted out. So I was glad to see the last of him. So it was a question of standing up to these people who had been slacking.
Did you get rid of many of them?
Well, I didn't get rid of any. They got rid of themselves. I'd like to make that clear, because this chap went on posting, got himself posted out, and another officer went on posting, got himself posted out. But the point that does arise, since you asked the question, an officer that I did not want posted out was posted out. So shall we say it works both ways?
So you very quickly, it seems, turned the unit round. You were happy with the performance of the unit after, you know, you got it going quite quickly.
Well, I did, and that was as a result that I was given the substantive rank of Lieutenant Colonel out of turn. All my promotions, whether to acting captain, to acting major, acting Lieutenant Colonel, had been out of turn all along. Now I was made substantive Lieutenant Colonel, also out of turn.
Now this, we might as well move on. This is in September 62. You were posted to, is it the infantry school?
No, I got that wrong. I was posted to Headquarters Western Command.
I see. Yes, I understand. I see what you've done. Now that was in September. Now what was your role at Headquarters? That's Simla.
I posted to Headquarters Western Command in Simla. Headquarters Western Command was responsible for our border in the west with China and Pakistan. I was brought in as Assistant Quartermaster General, you may call operational logistics, because the General Officer Commanding in Chief of the Command felt that operations with China were imminent. So we had to stock up the area which is called Ladakh, and where the Chinese had claims in areas what were called Aksai Chin. So I took company the General Officer Commanding in Chief during these visits to the borders, whether with China or Pakistan. Of course, I took company him, but on one I did not, and his helicopter crashed. and he was killed, shall we say. So shall we say it was fortunate that I did not accompany him. But nevertheless, normally till that period, when his helicopter crashed in 63, in 62, 63, I did accompany him on all his visits to operational areas. To come back to the problems with the Chinese, he had an intuition that Chinese were going to attack, and he called me to the operational room as well as to the general staff officer, first grade of the on the operations side, general staff side. He called us to the operations room on Sunday and said that we should draft a letter that the Chinese were about to attack. That was on 15th of August, 62, and on 16th of August, he dispatched a letter by courier to Delhi, to the chief of the general staff of the Indian Army in Delhi, that we were about to be attacked. 4 days later, a letter came back to say there was no danger, no threat. And in the event, a few days later, the Chinese did attack in September 62. So they had claimed the area which they felt had been denied to them by the McMahon line. It was really cartographic warfare that had been waged so far during the British days. McMahon in 1914, he was then the Foreign Secretary of the British Indian Government. He had drawn this line, which of course the Chinese even then had not accepted. But once India became independent, India had tried to assuage the Chinese by, shall we say, places like Jhansi, but the British after the 1904 Young Husband Expedition had insisted on maintaining troops, stationing troops, but India surrendered those, shall we say, outposts in Tibet as a concession to the Chinese. The Chinese had come to an agreement with Burma, but would not agree to the Indian viewpoint of the, which the British had postulated, of the watershed. So therefore, they attacked in September 62 to claim both their areas in the east as well as in the west.
Now, what do you remember of the fighting that occurred, and what was your, I mean, you'd be at the headquarters, obviously.
Well, as I say, we used to visit this area. The pointed issue simply is this, that by and large, we knew they were going to impose massive forces and claim the areas up to their claim line, in which they did succeed. If the aim had been to rebuff them, that physically would not have been possible. They were operating on a plateau and therefore did not have to climb. We were operating in an area where we had to climb up to defend it. So they had the advantage of terrain and they had the advantage of numbers. It was more difficult for us to maintain a force by air. They did not need any air maintenance, they could maintain by road. It was a foregone conclusion that they would come up to their claim line, irrespective of Pandit Nehru feeling that there will never be hostilities with the Chinese. And his philosophy had been Hindi Chini Bhai Bhai ever since 1947, or in fact from 1946, even before the grant of independence, on the basis that China and India were brothers, Asiatic brothers. But the Chinese didn't see it that way. Insofar as I'm personally concerned, the Chinese feel that the Middle Kingdom of theirs is the center of the world, and that the rest of the world should kowtow to them. And that basically was what the Chinese did. They came up to the claim line, both in the east and the west. The only difference is, in the west, they have not withdrawn. In fact, they ceded some area to Pakistan in the area of the Karakoram Pass. In the east, they did withdraw as a gesture to bring India to the negotiating table. India did come to the negotiating table, but there has been no agreement on what is called the watershed principle. The Chinese are not prepared to accept it, so they accepted it with Burma.
Now, so what would your actual... Could you describe a bit... You were assistant quartermaster general. Could you describe a bit more about the actual work you did?
Well, the actual work was, shall we say, doing... even flying the initial aircraft that were doing the... dropping sorties to see that they were going to the right area. I mean, I could have left it to the Air Force, but in any event, one accompanied the initial sorties thereafter once one was sure that these drops were being made at the right place. One left it to the Air Force to carry on, and the Army organization at the airfield called the Rear Airfield Supply Organization. It was rather intricate. It meant working long hours, because, as I say, it was an uphill task. Our troops had to be maintained by air, whereas the Chinese were maintained by road. I mean, insofar as our troops were concerned, they showed the appropriate qualities of the Indian Army of courage and fortitude. But the circumstances, ab initio, were against us. And I think the Chinese attack broke Pandit Nehru's heart, and he died a premature death in 1964. Because he'd been the architect all along for promoting the cause of communist China, even about their being given the seat in the Security Council. Otherwise, nationalist or KMT China had been holding on over there. India had voted for communist China being installed in place of the KMT or nationalist China. But nevertheless, in politics, it is more interest that count rather than friendship.